Hands up if you like rambling. Rambling, you know, rambling. Going rambling. Hands up if you like, see, you're fast asleep. Hands up if you like, I'll try that again. Hands up if you like rambling. Oh, quite a few of you do. Good, good. Clearly some of you hate it, but I won't go into that just now. We're going to go on a bit of a ramble this morning, all right? Not a physical one, so don't worry. We're going to begin at Lonehead, and then we're going to go to Tokyo, and then we're going to the River Jordan, and then we're going to stay at the River Jordan at a different time, and then eventually we're going to come back to Liberton Kirk Centre. Okay? So you're all ready. Have you got your packed lunches? Can anybody tell me what happened at Lonehead in 2012? Brian?
Pope's visit.
Sorry? The Pope's visit? Close? Close? Let's see if this works. Oh, it's not working so far. Yay! Is that the Pope? I've heard Ken Logan called many things in his life. Who's that? That's Ken Logan. Hands up if you know Ken Logan. What's he doing? He's carrying the Olympic torch. That's right. He was part of the Olympic torch relay. And he got filmed doing it. He was fair chuffed. And he was on the news and all that sort of stuff. And afterwards, he came and he spoke about it. And he said the best thing about the whole experience was this sense of being part of something much bigger. And sure enough, the Olympic movement is a worldwide movement. And by carrying the torch, he was, in a special way, part of that worldwide movement all the way down to London 2012. Okay. What happened in Tokyo in 1991? Well, obviously, lots of things happened, but particularly, I've got something in mind that's connected with what I've just shown you. Tokyo 1991. You're not going to get this. It was something that happened in the World Athletic Championships in Tokyo in 1991. Nope, not that at all. I've just got a wee picture. There you go. The British men's team, against all the odds, won the 400 meters relay in the final day of the World Championships. It's just me. We'd never won anything for centuries before that. We beat the American team. Isn't that awesome? They were the favorites. And, oh, dear, you see, we're so used to getting these medals these days. We can't remember what it was like. It was like supporting Scotland at rugby in those days. It was just, you just never won. You just never did it. Oh. Fingers crossed for this afternoon, by the way. The men's team, there was, what do we call it, Roger Black was in it, and anyway, I can't remember them all. But the final leg was run by Chris Akabusi. Hands up if you remember Chris Akabusi. He's an amazing guy. He's full of energy. I can remember him talking, being interviewed when they won this race, and he just couldn't believe it. He was so exuberant and full of joy. He'd won the final leg, and he'd been running against the world champion at 400 meters. And the world champion at 400 meters was in front, and Chris Akabusi behind, and he passed him in the final straight, and he won by about that much. It was just fantastic. We were in Pakistan at the time, so we didn't see it. But we did watch it on telly when we got home. We saw someone had videoed it for us. It was just amazing. Ever run in a relay race? Hands up if you've ever run in a relay race. Quite a few of you have. Good, good. It's very different from running an ordinary race. Because in a relay race, the aim is for you not to win. The aim is for you to pass that baton on. The aim is for the team to do their best, but your point in part of being in that race is to pass that baton on. As an individual, you can run your personal best if you like, but running your personal best, doing really well, isn't going to help anyone if you don't pass the baton on. In fact, if you don't pass the baton on, you're wasting that space. Someone else should be running it. And today's theme is passing the baton. What a long-winded introduction to a theme. But it's a really, really important point about today's theme. Because being a follower of Jesus is about passing the baton on. In the long term, it doesn't matter how well we live our own lives or how much we achieve. In the long term, what matters is whether or not we pass on that baton. And it can be applied, it's a sort of analogy, it can be applied to all sorts of things that we try and do as Christians. It could be applied to my role as minister. I will not be a good minister if I don't pass that baton on well. Just like John Cameron passed the baton on to me. And we're celebrating our bicentennial, and there's a long line of ministers who have passed on that baton. So the measure of my ministry is not what I do, it's how well I pass that baton on. And the same comes for the session clerks, same comes for the office bearers. Judy, the treasurer, will not be a good treasurer unless she passes on that treasurership in good condition. And we've got this sort of thing here at Liberton where we're really keen that people mentor. So you don't just do something, and then when you're not there, it all falls apart. We should be doing something, but while we're doing it, we should be mentoring someone else. So they're doing it alongside us. So in a sense, we're passing on the baton to them. So when the time comes and we stop, they're going to keep it going. So there's all sorts of ways in this which this image of passing on the baton could is a good image to think about church life. But most important of all, what matters most is whether or not we're passing on our faith. We need to be passing on our faith to others so that they can pass it on to others. And that's what passing the baton on is really about. There's a good example of someone passing on a baton and receiving a baton in today's reading. And it'd be worth looking up if you've got a pew Bible. It's on page number 369. But we're not going to read it just yet. Just have it looked up there in front of you. Okay? Before we read it, just a wee bit of background to remind us what's going on at the time and to bring us up to speed. First of all, one of the characters in the reading is someone called Elijah. Now, Elijah is probably one of the greatest of the Old Testament prophets. If you look through the pages of the Old Testament, Elijah really stands out. And when I think of him, I tend to be reminded of Winston Churchill. We celebrated the anniversary of Winston Churchill just recently. Winston Churchill was larger than life. He was a bit of a loner. He was a bit eccentric. But he was very brave. And he was very strong-minded. And he knew the enemy. And he was not afraid to stand up against them. And at a time when there's a lot of appeasement going on and the people were saying, oh, don't make such a fuss, we'll get over it, don't worry, it won't affect us, he knew the evil that was Nazism. And he stood up against it. And we have a lot to thank him for because of that. So he was a prophetic figure, a 20th century prophetic figure. And Elijah... Well, Elijah lived probably around about BC. Be around about the 16th, 15th century-ish BC. And the evil that he stood up against was the evil of Baal worship. He lived at a time when Baal worship was infecting an entire nation. Just like Nazism infected an entire nation. Baal was the goddess of fertility. Her idols were creeping into everyone's homes. They were everywhere. And like any form of idolatry, Baal worship wasn't life-giving, it was life-draining. It sucked the life out of people, sucked the joy out of people. Baal demanded terrible sacrifices, and she demanded them in the false hope that if they were made, she would send rain so that there'd be good harvests. But she was just an idol. All she really did was drain the joy out of people's lives so that they lived in fear and uncertainty, and she drew them away from God's love. That's what idols do. They drain the joy out of our lives, and they get between us and God. And Elijah saw this, and he spoke out against it. His greatest victory was on the top of Mount Carmel, where he challenged hundreds of priests of Baal. And you probably know the story really well. He won this, well, he didn't win it. He allowed God into the situation, and God won a famous victory. And there in front of all the people, it was clearly demonstrated how pointless and how worthless this Baal worship really was. But a bit like the D-Day landings in the Second World War, that victory on Mount Carmel wasn't the end of the war. There was still a lot of mopping up needed to be done. So Elijah needs a successor. And the successor that he passes the baton on to is one of his disciples. Elisha was not Elijah, but Elisha. Elisha was one of the company of the prophets. That's an expression to mean people who were still faithful to God. So scattered throughout Israel were still people who were faithful to God. They lived on the sort of fringes of things. They weren't in the center of powers, but they still clung on to the true religion, and they were known as the company of the prophets. And Elisha was one of the company of the prophets. But more than that, he was actually a disciple of Elijah. Elijah had mentored Elisha. He had trained him up. He had shared his ministry with him. And so Elisha knew how serious this whole thing was. He knew how important it was. And today's passage, the time comes for Elijah to step back and Elisha to step forward. So it's a passing on of the baton moment. So let's just read it through and see what we can learn. It's 2 Kings chapter 2. And it's on page number 369. And we're reading the first 14 verses. Here we go. When the Lord was about to take Elijah up to heaven in a whirlwind, Elijah and Elisha were on their way from Gilgal. Elijah said to Elisha, "Stay here. The Lord has sent me to Bethel." But Elisha said, "As surely as the Lord lives and as you live, I will not leave you." So they went down to Bethel. The company of the prophets at Bethel came out to Elisha and asked, "Do you know that the Lord is going to take your master from you today?" "Yes, I know," Elisha replied, "but do not speak of it." Then Elijah said to him, "Stay here, Elisha. The Lord has sent me to Jericho." And he replied, "As surely as the Lord lives and as you live, I will not leave you." So they went to Jericho. The company of the prophets at Jericho went up to Elisha and asked him, "Do you know that the Lord is going to take your master from you today?" "Yes, I know," he replied, "but do not speak of it." Then Elijah said to him, "Stay here. The Lord has sent me to the Jordan." And he replied, "As surely as the Lord lives and as you live, I will not leave you." So the two of them walked on. 50 men of the company of the prophets went and stood at a distance, facing the place where Elijah and Elisha had stopped at the Jordan. Elijah took his cloak, rolled it up, struck the water with it. The water divided to the right and to the left, and the two of them crossed over on dry ground. When they had crossed, Elijah said to Elisha, "Tell me, what can I do for you before I am taken from you?" "Let me inherit a double portion of your spirit," Elisha replied. "You have asked a very difficult thing," Elijah said. "Yet if you see me when I am taken from you, it will be yours, otherwise not." As they were walking along and talking together, suddenly a chariot of fire and horses of fire appeared and separated the two of them, and Elijah went up to heaven in a whirlwind. Elisha saw this and cried out, "My father, my father, the chariots and horsemen of Israel." And Elisha saw him no more. Then he took hold of his own clothes and he tore them apart. He picked up the cloak that had fallen from Elijah and went back and stood on the bank of the Jordan. Then he took the cloak that had fallen from him and he struck the water with it. "Where now is the Lord, the God of Elijah?" he asked. When he struck the water, it divided to the right and to the left, and he crossed over. Heavenly Father, please open our hearts now to your word. In Jesus' name, amen. So here we are by the Jordan River, round about 1600 BC. What have we noticed? It's hard not to notice Elisha's tenacity. which is a big word meaning he does not give up. He hangs on, he hangs on. Elijah keeps saying to him, come on, that's enough. You've shown, you've proved your loyalty. That's enough. Let me go on alone. This is going to be, this is the end. Elisha sticks with him to the end. If you're part of a race, you have to get to the end. You can't just give up. You can't just stop short. You've got to get to the end. I remember first, it's funny what comes to your mind. I remember Lucy, my daughter's first race. It was at the kindergarten at Murray Christian School. And they all lined up, all these bewildered kids, surrounded by all these mad, keen parents. And they're starting, oh, you've got to run to that light, you've got to run, Lucy, you've got to run. Lucy's going, as they do. And the whistle went, and they're all sort of milling around. And then some of them got the idea, and then everybody followed, and only one of them actually crossed the line. The others, as soon as they crossed the line, the others stopped running. That's not how you run a race. You can't stop before the line. Elisha, he knew how important this mission was that he'd been sharing. And so he hangs in there. He's not put off. Notice that he doesn't believe in half measures. When his master asks him what he wants, he says he wants a double portion of his spirit. This is not necessarily that he wants to be twice as great as Elijah. Inheritance laws said that the first son, the eldest son, gets a double portion, and everybody else just gets a single portion. So Elisha is claiming his right as a firstborn son to get his rightful inheritance. But there's a sense that there's more than that. There's a sense that he doesn't want to just for everything just to fizzle out and him to live off Elijah's fame. It's a sense he wants to carry on the job that Elijah started. He wants to spread the message. He wants to see things through to the end. And his reward? Well, here we have an artist's depiction of his reward. Oh, that's Ken Logan. What's he doing? There we go. There's an artist's depiction of his reward. I don't know how clear you can see it, but then maybe you're not meant to see it clearly, because what the author is trying to describe is something that's almost indescribable. There's a sense of horses of fire and chariots of fire and a whirlwind and Elijah getting swept up to heaven. And it's as if Elisha is given a glimpse of the power of God. We know that God's always with us. There's passages in the Old Testament. There's a famous passage when Elisha asks God to reveal to his servant his power and presence, and the servant's eyes are open. All around the hills, all around, are chariots and horsemen, angelic hosts. So here's, long before that happened, Elisha himself getting a glimpse of that. This is the power that had been with him and Elijah all the time that they've been carrying out this really difficult task. This is the power that won that victory on Mount Carmel. This is God. And Elisha, one of his rewards of hanging there to the end is he's given just a glimpse of the power that's going to be with him, the power that was with Elijah, but now that's going to be with him. And the other thing he gets is Elijah's cloak, which is a sort of symbol, a symbol of that power. And of course, he immediately uses it. Imagine the risk as he went up to that Jordan River with this cloak. And there's everybody watching. Oh, what's he going to do? Whose cloak is that? They'd seen Elijah strike the water with that cloak and walk across. Now there's Elisha doing it. Imagine the risk. Imagine if he'd struck the water and nothing had happened. Great act of faith. But he glimpsed God's power. He knew God was with him. Takes the cloak, bang, splash. And then he walks across on dry land. It's wonderful. It's a great sort of image in my mind of that passing on of the baton. It's not just us who's involved here. It's the mighty God, the living God. We are just his servants. We are just passing on his baton. We're just doing his work. And let's fast forward now to about 30 AD. We're still at the Jordan River. Because you see, there are lots of echoes of the New Testament in the Old Testament. They're sort of prophetic echoes. The Old Testament gives us a foretaste of what's to come. And one of these echoes is the parallel that exists between, on the one hand, Elijah and Elisha, and on the other hand, John the Baptist and Jesus. See, like Elijah before him, John the Baptist, he's a strong, rugged character. He's a bit of an eccentric. He lives a life of rigorous austerity. He's not afraid to speak out. So there's a similarity between Elijah and John the Baptist. But there's also a similarity between Elisha and Jesus. Because like Jesus, Elisha is much more approachable, much more visibly compassionate. Elisha chooses to live with the people. He chooses to help them in their times of need. Whereas Elijah is a lot more, oh, I'm out in the desert. I'm keeping separate from all of this stuff. And just as Jesus did, Elisha chooses to walk the land and heal the sick and visit the homes of sinners. Remember how the religious leaders in Jesus' day were quick to criticize him because he spent all this time with sinners. And remember his reply. He said, who is it that needs a doctor? Is it people who are well? No. Surely it's people who are sick. I've come not to save the righteous, but sinners. Like you and me. Which is why we love him. All the more. Elisha demands a double portion of Elijah's spirit so that he can carry on the work that Elijah began. Jesus also commands us to carry on the work he began. But we don't have to demand a double portion of Jesus' spirit. Jesus freely gives it to us. He promises his Holy Spirit freely to anyone who asks him. And he promises that in his power, we will be able to do even more than Jesus has done. Listen to these words from John 14, from Jesus. I tell you the truth. Anyone who has faith in me will do even more than I have been doing. He will do even greater things than these because I'm going to the Father, and I will do whatever you ask in my name so that the Son may bring glory to the Father. So here's something more we learn about God's baton relay. It's not just about one-to-one. It's not just about the 400 meters. It's far more like the Olympic torch relay, which is about spreading a message so that it becomes a worldwide movement. The baton of faith has an impact on more and more people, the more it's passed on. So, what have we learned today? Well, here are some of the things that I've learned. Being a follower of Jesus is not a private or individualistic thing. It's not something we do on our own. Keeping our experience of faith to ourselves makes about as much sense as running in a relay race and then refusing to pass on the baton. Jesus says, go and make disciples. That's the point of all of this. And his disciples do that. And the message is spread on, and the movement goes wider and wider and wider until it even gets as far as Liberton and reaches our hearts and our lives today. Remember I mentioned Chris Akabusi earlier. You see, the 400 meters relay wasn't the only relay race he ran in. Chris became a devout Christian when he was an athlete. He was on Songs of Praise a few years back describing exactly what happened. He's also a West Ham supporter, by the way. I'm not quite sure if being a West Ham supporter is... Anyway, never mind. I don't know why I said that. On Songs of Praise, he talked about how for most of his life up to that point, everything had gone well. He'd been this great runner. He's a great exuberant extrovert character. Everybody loved him. He did well in everything he did. Everybody wanted to be his roommate. Everybody wanted to be on the same team as him. You know, his life was just going fantastic. Beautiful wife, married, all the things you could hope to dream of. And then his wife was expecting twins, and they were stillborn. And it just shattered him. You know, sometimes your life's going on fine, and then it's your first real experience of things going wrong. And it just completely shattered him. He didn't know, all his confidence left him. He really, the joy went out of his life. And not long after it happened, he was at another athletics event, you know, these big sporting events, and he was up in his room, and he was alone, and he was lost, and he spotted a Gideon Bible. And he picked it up, and he read it. And he said, that night, I had a dream, and I dreamt that I met Jesus. And he was nothing like I expected. He was genuine, and he was real, and he was loving. That night, in my dream, I discovered what true love and true forgiveness is all about. And he woke up the next day, a new person, full of the joy of the Lord. He says, the first thing I wanted to do was go out and tell everybody. So he rushes out onto the athletics track. There's all these famous athletes training away. He's going, guys, you should, I just met Jesus. You should. And they're all going, oh yeah. You know. But the interesting thing is, when something amazing happens in your life, you just want to tell your friends, and they were his friends. He was passing on the baton. Something else I've learned, that being a Christian, being a follower of Jesus, demands tenacity. You can't just do it when it suits you. It's got to be part of your life. There's no point stopping before the end. There's no point stopping and putting the baton down. You've got to be in it for the long haul. You know, one of the most common criticisms of Christians is the way they let people down and the way they live their lives. You know, they say they believe one thing, and yet their lives show something else. You think of all the people you've met, oh, bunch of hypocrites. Oh, I'm glad I'm not like that. Call himself a Christian. And there's a degree of truth in that. I mean, there's some of it is just people looking for an excuse or looking for something to beat us with, but there's also a degree of truth in it. Because in the whole of our lives, we're being watched, we're being observed. We are in the process of passing on those batons. And so we've got to be wholehearted about it. We can't just be Christians on a Sunday. We can't just say we believe something and then live out something else. There's a degree of responsibility, just like when you pass that baton on to the athlete, there's a degree of responsibility there. It's the same with us. Being a follower of Jesus demands tenacity. He expects us to hang on there and to get to the end. And the reward, well, ask any runner in a relay race. What's the reward of a relay race? Maybe the reward is when your team wins the race, but the immediate reward is getting that baton safely into someone's hand and watching them sprint around the corner holding it. That's the reward. That's the buzz. I wonder how the person who placed that Gideon's Bible in that athlete's village room felt when they heard Chris Akabusi's story. Oh! There's no greater joy than seeing God at work in someone's life and knowing that despite yourself, God has used you to be part of that joy. You know, there's no greater joy than passing on that baton, watching that person run on with it. And as I've been trying to say, sharing our faith doesn't just mean talking about it all the time. It's total, 24/7. It's living it all the time. And you talk about it when people ask you, but living it all the time. And that brings us back to Liberty & Kirk Center. Because here's someone who has very recently just passed on a baton. Any idea who she is? Patsy Grant. For years, Patsy Grant has been running our senior citizens club. First with her husband Alistair, and then with the help of her team. And throughout her years of ministry, her love and her compassion, which is God's gift to her, has been multiplied. From the very start, she made sure that everyone was always welcome. Everybody got a big hug, beginning and end. And if anybody didn't turn up, she was on the phone. Are you all right? Is everything okay? And everybody loved her for it. But that sort of thing's infectious. That atmosphere pervaded the whole team. That lovely, gracious, compassionate atmosphere pervaded the whole team. And brought the best out of people. Even the most moany, cantankerous people loved Patsy Grant and loved the Senior Citizens Club. And just recently, she's passed that baton on. She's mentored and raised and now passed that baton on to Brian and Jenny Riles. And I can see the influence of Patsy in what they do, just as people are being influenced by them. And in her team, and in their team. It's still going on. They have, if you like, a double portion of Patsy's inheritance to work with. And, you know, the real fellowship at the Senior Citizens Club takes place at tea time, halfway through. That's when the buzz of conversation starts to rise. That's when people find out really how well they're getting on, what they're doing, and start sharing things. And start passing on batons, if you like. It's a very, very special time. So, being a Christian, being a follower of Jesus, is not something we just do on our own. It's not something we do some of the time. It's about being part of a relay race, where the baton we are entrusted to pass on is the joy of our faith. Let's just spend a few moments in quiet. A time to think back to our past and our faith journey and ask, where did I get my baton from? Who was it that passed it on to me? And a time to think ahead. The places that you're going to be this week, the people you're going to meet, people you might be able to pass the baton on to, so you can see them take it up and run around the corner. Loving God, we thank you for your hand on our lives. We thank you that we can be part of your event, the passing on of the good news of Jesus. We thank you for the joy it brings to us and to those we pass it on to and those we receive it from. And may our lives be a celebration of thanksgiving, a celebration of your grace.